Welcome back to That's Cricket, and this is your Boxing Day Test Preview, brought to you by Runmaker. We have a very special guest, Dan Jads. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Adam. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to say that I have just stopped crying after the after the end of the third Test match. But apart from that, I'm good.
So some of our JM followers and community might know Dan Jads. Been in the warehouse a couple of times, ball and play. You've had a little bit of feature right there for a couple of times. And you are an Englishman. So they've got the rivalry here for the Ashes. And so I'm happy to have you here. I'm so super excited to have you here. Tell me a little bit about your time. You were over in Australia for the first Test, right?
Correct. Yeah, I had a really, really good trip over to Perth, over in Western Australia. It was so disappointing that Test match only lasted 2 days, right? It was, everything there was kind of building up for this incredible Ashes series. And it was feeling like it was going that way. And then I got shortchanged. 3 days spare in Perth. Hey, look, there's worse places in the world to have 3 days off than Perth. What an incredible country. Incredible country, amazing people, great weather, great beaches, great food. And yeah, hopefully not my last trip over to Australia, but that one was cut a little bit short.
Yes, I actually haven't been to Perth, even though I was born in Australia. That's one of the cities I haven't been to. Been pretty much everywhere else, but Perth is where I haven't gotten to. So we're looking at a 3-0 series win, 3-0 Ashes win to Australia right now. But we don't call this coming up next two tests, the Boxing Day Test, a dead rubber. The Boxing Day Test is, you almost say it's like, I call it Super Bowl of cricket. It's like the big highlight event of the year, being at the MCG, best cricket ground in the world. We're playing now for Test Championship points, and we're playing, you know, for the next 2 years inside of that bracket. So what's your first thoughts now on how it's going to look for World Test Championships and where we kind of sit and kind of reviewing where we are after this new recycle? Because England's now looking at 2 wins, 5 losses, Australia 6 wins, no losses.
yeah, the if the Ashes scoreline doesn't look great for England, the World Test Championship scoreline doesn't look particularly good either, does it? England, they've been quite famously quoted, haven't they, saying that they don't really understand how the point system works, and it doesn't really appear to be a massive priority for them, which is strange considering the finals for these championships have all been held in England, and you'd think there would be an appetite in order to get through to a final and be successful in one. But not something that this team have been particularly bothered about. I kind of feel like the World Test Championship thing will be much more important for Australia. As you said, they're undefeated. And the way that the point system works, it's done on a win percentage, isn't it? Rather than the actual points on the board, because all of the Test series are all mismatched and imbalanced with how many Tests people play and others play. England's, what did you say they'd won? Two?
Their win percentage is 27. 2 wins, 5 losses, 1 draw. Looking at, 27 points. Not great.
Not great. I mean, it's mathematically impossible for England to come back and win the Ashes, and I think it would require some form of miracle for England to make a World Test Championship final here as well from that starting point. But as you said, this feels like the kind of the pinnacle of Test cricket. It's the Boxing Day Test. There's 100,000 people in the stadium. It's such a shame the series isn't competitive, but it's a real kind of moment on the calendar for people to kind of gravitate towards.
England playing for the moral victory at Boxing Day.
Well, we've got to be playing for something, because there's not much else to play for, Adam, is there? And if you can't win morals, I mean, what can you win?
Yeah, I think one of the things is interesting is that it's been like a reset. You know, they kind of reset their team, and they're moving forward with this baseball style of cricket, and it hasn't kind of paid off in the way they wanted it to, even though they've had moments of doing some okay moments. But the okay moments have almost been un-baseball-esque. It's been just stay at the crease and knock it out and score 50 off 150 balls. It's interesting. We're going to get into the 11, because we have changes coming into this lineup. Like I said, this contest still matters. Australia is going for 5-0. That's their goal coming into this. Straight away, straight off the rip, as soon as we got off the field, Pat Cummins is like, I'm not playing. I'm not playing in the next test. I'm good. We've kind of won the series. And Lyon did a hamstring, so he's going to have surgery. So we got two people that are out. We also consider Smith was ill for the last test, so he would consider coming back in. Overnight, they did release the squad. We're looking at a squad with a similar squad, but with two new names added. We have Jai Richardson, which would be the replacement, technically for Cummins, and then the spinner coming in, Todd Murphy. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the squad potentially, and if you have an 11 in mind.
Yeah, I've got an 11. But as the Australian, surely you're the most qualified person to give the 11 or put the predicted 11 here for the Australian team. Jai Richardson's really exciting, right? He's struggled with injuries, but which fast bowler around the world hasn't struggled with various injuries at the moment? He's been one of those that's been plagued by them. But there's no denying the fact that if he gets opportunities, he bowls absolute rockets, doesn't he? He came into a Big Bash game we saw that we'll talk about in a bit. We saw him playing club cricket. We saw him against the Lions and building this fitness back. He bowls 90 plus mile an hour, which is like gold dust in the world of cricket. And if he can get on the field, it's exciting. Todd Murphy, look, that position for Australia for Nathan Lyon has been so locked down for so long. The likes of Todd Murphy, Matt Cunnaman and Corey Richolio, I don't necessarily know if they've ever had a fair chance to get into a Test 11. Are they entitled to a bit of a longer run? Todd Murphy has had a go before, and I think he does an all right job. I think they'll play him. Australia will play him in this Test match. Because of the balance of the side, they'll need one to be able to rotate the other four seamers around. But I've got my 11 for Australia that I would pick if I had any kind of say about it, which fortunately I don't, but I'd go with Weatherald and Head at the top of the order. Marner sticks at three. Smith comes back in at four. He's already been named as captain, so he'll be there. Green stays at five, although he's having a really, really tough time of it.
Yes.
I would bring Bo Webster in. I want to see him play. I think there needs to be a look going forward for him. Carey then drops down to number seven. He's just phenomenally good. Nisa extends the batting lineup a little bit at eight. Stark continues to stay in there at number nine. Todd Murphy and Scott Boland round it out. So despite dropping Joss English and Khawaja, I don't feel you lose much with the batting if you get Nisa in at number eight, would be my 11.
Yeah, no, that's a solid pick right there. He did such a good job in the Brisbane test. Bowled very well. Didn't bowl very well in the first innings. He was kind of wayward, but he really dialed in that second innings, and that's a good 11. My 11, I had it similar. We're going Head, Weatherald, Marnus, Smith. I actually liked Khawaja. Khawaja is in this, we're in this situation with Khawaja. Do we give him a send-off? Do we bring in the new blood? I think I'm going on the side of send-off and just kind of letting him have a bat. He did bat very well. And when you compare it to who has scored runs between who scored more runs, Khawaja, Inglis, and Green, Khawaja scored more runs. So he did very well in the last test. He got 80-odd. I got 250, so I'm okay with him being in the squad. So I have him at five. Carey, I actually want to move him up the order. He's batting very well at six. Carey is the second. He was until Travis Head hit that 170. He had scored the most runs for Australia this calendar year. But then Travis Head scored his 170, so it moves him into the second most runs scored for Australia in the calendar year. But he's also Carey is sitting at seventh in the world internationally this calendar year for runs scored in Test cricket. He sits above every Englishman except for Joe Root. Batting at 6-7. I do whatever. I can't get away from it. He's just in that position. He gets me every time we talk on the phone. So I want to keep him at six. I want to keep him at six. And then, yes, I'm going to add Green and Webster, dropping Josh Inglis. Because Green and Webster, you can rotate. That's kind of like one batter. It's like one bowler. You can bowl them. They're both rotatable as part-time bowlers. Stark, Boland. And then my big thing is, like, I don't know why no one has talked about this or not. I'll talk about it. Is Zampa. I don't know why we don't have him considered. I don't know what point in history they were like, you know what, we're just going to keep you bowling white ball cricket. We're not going to let you bowl red ball cricket. I don't know if he doesn't want to do it, but I like having a leg spinner rather than an off spinner. I don't know what your thoughts are on this. Leg spinner, off spinner, Zamper.
I had a little look, actually, because I know you spoke about him before we started recording, and he's taken 115 first-class wickets in, what, 41 first-class games. His average with the ball is 46.5 in first-class cricket, which doesn't exactly bode well to thinking the step up to Test cricket is going to be all that successful for him. It feels that the bar from Shane Warne has been set so high for Test cricket leg spinners that anybody, regardless of nationality, regardless of how much you've played, is always going to be compared to the late, great Shane Warne, and almost certainly going to have to, will go under the bar of the, what Shane Warne set. The other thing as well is, a bit like Adil Rashid, will bowl a pace with white ball cricket that when you're attacking it becomes quite difficult to get after. Whereas actually with red ball cricket, it's a nice pace that you can kind of go, I'll play it off the surface, I'll knock it around for 3 or 4 and over. I won't necessarily have to take a risk. Against this England team though, that have the, I don't know whether you've noticed, but an occasional moment of a bit of brain dead batting, potentially, potentially some white ball leg spin from Adam Zampa could be the key to unlock another door to find some more skeletons for this England team if Australia really needed to find another one.
Yeah. I mean, I did come up with some stats also. So for the three guys in consideration for the job right now, Murphy, Kuderman, and I'm just calling him Rocco. Okay, I'm a Corey Rocco. Todd Murphy, 7 matches, 22 wickets, economy of 3.2, average of 28. That's his time on the Australian team. Kuderman, 5 matches, 25 wickets, economy of 3.25, average of 22. And then Corey Rocco has 161 first-class wickets. Zampa in white ball cricket, 116 matches, 196 wickets, economy of 5.5, average of 28. Now, comparing it to Shane Warne, 191 matches, 293 wickets, economy of 4.25, average of 25. So he's the second best white ball bowler because we have Shane Warne. And Shane Warne, when he went to play red ball cricket, 145 matches, 708 wickets. So obviously the ratio there for his test match wickets is obviously like so crazy about everyone else. Economy of 2.6, average of 25. I just feel like he would give him a go. Like, you just give him a go. Even if he had one test to see how he went, if he got smacked, then okay. But
you're just desperate to get this average age of this Australian team up a bit higher, aren't you? Get another mid 30-year-old in the 11 just because you want one more.
I just want a leggy. I just want to see a leggy. I just want to see more. I want to see more leg spin in Test cricket. Maybe I'll make a campaign to see more leg spin. I'll even take Marnus bowling leg spin. I'll take Steve Smith bowling leg spin. I just want to see some leg spin. That's what...
Yeah, that art form is, it's disappeared, isn't it? Which is a shame.
But it is a shame.
I don't want to break it. I don't want to ruin any fireworks. I just don't think Adam Zampa is the answer for you.
That's not the answer. So it's probably going to be, looks like there, Murphy. Bring him into the side. He will round out the 11, Murphy. He did bowl in the famous series in England over there. I don't know if you remember Todd Murphy bowling over in England during that Ashes, but he played 7 matches. So he will probably make another start here at the MCG.
This Ashes has provided us with amazing moments, and we are so thankful to Runmaker VR for being part of the show. Runmaker VR is your virtual reality indoor net session that you can improve your game from the comfort of your own home. You can train your reflexes with lifelike pace, refine your technique with real-time feedback, and take on sessions inspired by legends to help your game improve in the middle. This Ashes, don't just be a spectator, own the moment. Work on your short ball, work on your cover drive, even your ramp shot. And without real-time feedback, you can record your sessions and you can send it to a coach to make sure that your game is on point this season. Your journey starts on the pitch with Runmaker VR. Download Runmaker VR and save the sessions with code RUNMAKERSUB-E6EFEA to get 50% off your first 6-month subscription when signing up before January 31st. Thank you again to Runmaker for getting behind That's Cricket Podcast.
Switching to England, they haven't announced their squad yet, but I have my thoughts on what they could be doing. I really like Jax. Jax opens in white ball cricket, or has opened in white ball cricket, can open in T20 cricket. I think of the 11 that we've had so far, Ollie Pope is probably the bottom of the barrel for all the person on the target board the most for England, and probably looking to the pundits would probably want to rotate out. So I have Crawley, Duckett, Jacks in at three. That could work. Jacks in at three. Root, Brooks, Stokes, Smith, Cass, Archer, Bashir, and Tung. I don't know who the other. Are they saying we're bringing in Atkinson in instead of Bashir, and just there's no Jacks keeps as a spinner. Maybe we go Atkinson instead of Bashir. I'm just trying stuff. I'm throwing stuff at the wall if I'm England. I don't know. Apparently, spin doesn't work in Australia, so we can get rid of Bashir and bring Atkinson back. But he only took him a while to get his first wicket. Also, there's Bethel. I just think that Bethel's another opportunity for England to do something stupid. I just think back to the India test where he, like, the India test for me just, like, epitomizes England. And, like, you had 70 runs to win and you had 7 wickets in hand and you all just started throwing your wickets away. Like, well, I'll be coming down the track and trying to slug one. Just not see out the day. So who are you going to pick for your 11 for England? What are you going with? Yeah.
If I'm honest with you, Adam, I'm about as confused as an England fan as I've been so far. And there's lots of different reasons as to why. I think the MCG has become a little bit better for seamers over the last couple of years. It's not quite as flat as what it has been in the last, say, 10 years. So actually, does the seam bowler become slightly more important than potentially picking another spinner in the side? So that's kind of where I am on that bit. The bit that I'm confused about is because this team hasn't really worked for the 3 test matches. To me now, it would feel a little bit odd now that the series is over, that there would be any form of wholesale changes involved. Because these next 2 test matches, yes, we spoke about the World Test Championship points at the start of it, but really and truly for this series, they don't really have any relevance on there. And I know Zach Crawley was quoted the other day saying, well, yeah, well, if we lose 3-2, it's still a good result. And it would have been, had it not have been 3-0, like kind of 2-0 game or 2 games that other teams might have taken their foot off the game. But anyway, I'm keeping the top 7 exactly the same. I agree with you. I think Ollie Pope is under fire. I think people are desperate to make a scapegoat of him. I think he's going to be the guy that's going to be on the chopping block at the end of this tour. And potentially this is the end of his kind of England test career at number 3. Ben Duckett, interestingly, has got a worse record in this series than what Ollie Pope has.
Oh, really?
If Pope's getting pelters, then Duckett certainly should be as well. But there is a lack of competition for top order batters in the squad to come in. Jacks keeps his spot because he's been, as you say, okay. Been quite impressive with what he's done. Assist the new Moeen Ali is another guy that kind of a hard white ball batter that can bowl a bit and gets a run in the test side. Atkinson comes back for me. Cass gets a rest. Archer stays. And then Josh Tung stays as well. Josh Tung's a guy that I've find really, really impressive. I think he's got an ability to bowl a match-winning spell, which he did show at Adelaide. Just nobody else there was there to kind of back it up. England haven't dovetailed very well. That would be my 11.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Tung. I like the way that he bowled. I like his action, and I just like the rhythm that he bowls in. I think it's he did bowl well. He got 4 wickets in that second innings. I think, yes, he needed that backup guy to kind of hold up an end and you know, restrict Australia, but it wasn't to be. So I'm liking that. What about the Potts is also another opportunity for a different bowling rotation. I don't know what they're gonna do. They did switch out Atkinson. They could have had Wood. He's injured, so we'll see where they go with their 11. What we can expect at the MCG if we go back a little bit, think about what it was like last time England were at the MCG, one of the most iconic cricket games ever. Not just Ashes, up there in Ashes definitely, but up there also an all-time match. Scotty Boland, 6-for-7 at the G, built the man a statue. That was the last time they were there.
Have they built the statue yet?
They surely must have. They surely
does
must
it
have.
Exist?
I don't know. If it's not already, I'm sure they will. People will come with, you know, little trophies. They'll have their own little statues. They'll do something. They have to do something for it. It has to go down in history as the greatest spell ever. One of the greatest spells ever. It's absolutely incredible. Yes, Boxing Day, 2021, England, 185 get bowled out. Australia, 267, and then bowled out again that second innings, England, 68. Rolled for 68.
So what you're saying is, Adam, is that this could still get worse for England.
It could still get worse. It could be absolutely rolled again. It could be another short test if you decide to bat first. If England win the toss and bat first, it could be all over. It could be another two-day test, honestly. It could be. There's a reality where that happens. Hopefully the Australia bats long enough for it to... I hope both of them bat long enough so that it goes on for more than 2 days, 3 days. But that's what we can expect. How do you think it's going to go? How do you think this is going to go? What's your prediction?
I don't necessarily think this England team are the team just to roll over and give up. I don't believe that they are the ones that kind of feel sorry for themselves with what's gone on. I kind of feel like they'll move on from this stuff quite quickly. Almost that kind of classic Ted Lasso line of be a goldfish. It feels like that's a very kind of England baseball mentality to have. And they'll almost go into this MCG test match as this is a one-off test match for them to win. They'll play aggressively. I think they played the best cricket that they had so far in the series, Adelaide. Wasn't quite enough. When they're finishing second, it's almost like they're finishing third in a two-horse race rather than finishing second. And the damage is so severe, it becomes really difficult for them to overcome that. But I can see England fighting back. I can see them putting up a good performance. I hope they do anyway. There are plenty of cricketers in this England batting lineup that are desperate for runs, and they are queuing up. Only Joe Root has scored 100 in this series. And even outside of that innings, he's hardly been the vintage Joe Root that we've come to know and love on this side of the planet of the last couple of years. So actually, that top seven is due. And they are due a lot of runs. And hopefully we'll start to see some of that develop in Australia, because then we can take a little bit of promise forward and go, oh, you know what? 4 years' time, Brooke, Duckett, Smith, they have been in Australia. They have got success. They can take that back again. But I think the likelihood is that it ends up being 4-0 Australia.
Yeah, that's probably the way that it's going to go down. Interesting to talk about Joe Root. The people that have got him out the most in Test cricket are Stark, Cummins, Bumrah, and Hazelwood. They're the four guys that have taken his pegs the most. And I think it's not a bad look on Root. It's a good look on those four bowlers. Like the best, those four bowlers are the best four bowlers we have in Test cricket right now. You could argue Rabada is also in that list. He does have some play, enough cricket against England to, you know, be up there with those numbers. But that's what happens when you have the best bowlers versus the best batters. Sometimes the bowlers, you have to get wickets. You know, you can't be not out. You know, you're not Dunn Bradman. You're not always going to score 100 runs. It's a different era. You're always going to get your poles taken out at some point. So I think it's just more a look on how good the bowling is rather than how bad his batting is. Because his batting is good, but it's really looking for his legacy. I think is going to be a little bit different than how we look at other legacies. I think it's because of how the team of England have played. England haven't got any big trophies next to their names to go along with his record to make it feel like he's the best. Because Ricky Ponting, he's surpassed Ricky Ponting in Test runs, but Ricky Ponting has a cabinet full of trophies. You know what I mean? So it just feels different, right?
Yeah, and I suspect that's probably why the likes of Jacques Callis doesn't get the flowers that he deserves for the career that he had and the numbers that he's put together as a batter and a bowler and a fielder, because he doesn't have those titles and those headlines to go next to those statistics. But I mean, the beauty of it is the fact that those statistics will be there. They'll exist. Whether he goes past Sachin or not, I think he will. It'll be undeniable in the fact that he has scored more test runs than anybody else. You'll be able to come up with an argument as to whether he is the best to have ever done it, or why he wasn't, or why he was, or anything like that. But actually, the bottom line of the number is that he's there. I don't think he needed to score 100 in Australia to be considered one of the greatest batters of all time either. But he's now done that, so we can't use that as an argument against as to how good he is. I just think, as I say, he hasn't quite written the headlines and lit up the scorebooks like we'd have hoped he would have done during the course of this series. The 100 was great, but actually the other five innings that he's played have been relatively disappointing.
Yeah, I think because it seems like we do attach greatness to the victory rather than to the stat, which is kind of weird, because when you consider Don Bradman, we just consider his stat line as the greatest. But and he also did win a lot, but it's also the stat line that kind of makes him him. But we don't apply that same logic to Root. We just go, well, he hasn't won much stuff. So even though he's scored all these runs, he hasn't got 100 in Australia, he can't be the best. It's going to be interesting. But you're right. I think, you know, 100 years from now, when they look on Crick Info, they're still going to see his name at the top of the list, right? That's yeah. That's how it's going to be. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're not going to, our grandchildren are not going to sit there and go, well, he only scored 100 in Australia. You know what I mean? They're going to look at the score. They're going to look at the rankings, and they're going to see that he has the most runs on the list. So yeah. So that's what we, is he going to get 100? Is he going to get 100 at the MCG?
Sure. Why not? Why not? Sure. Let's Why have not? It. Let's have it.
Let's have it. So, yes, I think it will. I think Australia wins. I think Australia wins. Let's go. Let's go lunch on day four. Let's do that. Just make keep everyone happy. Probably a little bit. Could be a little bit earlier. But that's what I think it's going to be for the Boxing Day test. Moving from the Boxing Day test, a couple of things coming up. This segment is brought to you by Runmaker. We're going to touch on the Brisbane Heat Scorchers BBL game that broke history. There was so many things that happened in this game that I just want to touch on. Amazing cricket spectacle. We're going to touch on here. So there it was, 258 was the third highest run chase in T20 history. It was the first match in Australia to have a combined 500 runs scored in the T20 game. Sixth highest combined score ever in T20s. First pair to score 100 in a chase, Matty Renshaw, 102 of 51, and Wilderness, I can't say his name properly, 110 of 54, 212 the partnership, the highest in the Big Bash. First time in the T20 that 10 bowlers went for 40 runs or more, and the most sixes in the in a BBL game, 36, which beat the last record by 10 of 26. What a game of cricket that was.
It was like, it was perfect franchise T20 cricket, wasn't it? Just absolutely amazing. Like power, fireworks, the cricket shots that were played were classy. I didn't really get the impression that anybody was slogging, so to speak, during the course of the game. And it just made the Gabba look tiny. Australia don't make small cricket grounds. No. Yet the ball disappearing into the second tier of the Gabba with ease at that point. Did they just change the altitude or make the air thinner in Brisbane that day to make that ball fly how it did? It was wild.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the humidity or whatever. They were just going off, or the energy was up, but it was unbelievable. And, you know, I wanted Matt Renshaw in the test squad. I wanted him up at top of the order. I think that everyone in Brisbane's happy that he wasn't picked in the test squad so that he could be there for the Heat and score his ton.
Yeah, it was just such a good innings. He was actually out on an oval whilst he was on 20, just to kind of add a bit of insult to the injury for the Scorchers there. And then Jack Wildermuth as well, he was dropped on 42 and went on to score what he did to get the Heat over the line. There were two huge moments in that run chase that could have made that game appear so differently. And the thing I found quite fascinating as well is I don't really think anybody bowled particularly badly. The stat lines would tell you that they did, but watching it back, I didn't get the impression that anybody's like, oh, that no wonder they've gone for 80 off their four overs. They didn't bowl that badly.
Yeah, I think that everyone was just teeing off, and I think that's the thing with T20 cricket is sometimes that you don't actually bowl that bad. You're bowling really good balls, but you're just hitting the good balls. That's like part of T20 cricket. You're hitting everything. You're swinging for the fences. It creates a spectacle. And it's I think it's great for cricket. It's great to have those high-scoring games. That's what you want to see. That's why we invented T20 cricket, for the fun and the excitement and the spectacle, and have the crowds come out for a night of entertainment and fun. So that was really cool. I just wanted to touch on that, the record-breaking set there for the BBL. Speaking of T20 cricket, we are coming into the T20 World Cup in February. Last time T20 World Cup was on, it was here in the States. That was big and exciting. Team USA beat Pakistan. Big news there. You know, England had a chance. England were playing okay. Australia got rolled by Afghanistan. Ends up being South Africa, India. What do you think of coming up here for England? Coming out of the Ashes, Bazball hasn't quite worked in the test situation. They do currently sit third, England, in the T20 standings, ICC standings. What are you thinking here for England coming into the T20 World Cup, and you think they're going to go all the way?
I think there's going to be about 8 teams out there that could definitely go on and win this T20 World Cup. So much about T20 cricket is about momentum in a tournament, and any one of these top 8 or top 10 teams could beat anybody on their day. The game is so short. You just need one magic moment by a particular player, whether it's 100, whether it's a fifer or a hat trick or a piece of fielding, that just swings the momentum of a game so quickly that it becomes so difficult for them to kind of, or the opposition, to turn that around. Clearly, India are going to have a huge advantage playing at home, that they're going to know the conditions. They're going to be able to pick and choose the grounds that get used on those particular days. The ICC will supposedly have the oversight of the pitches that get prepared. However, they're still going to be in India. Those players are still going to be better suited to play in those competitions. But yeah, when you look at that England team, when you look at the likes of Phil Salt and Josh Butler and Adil Rashid and Jofra Archer, England have a squad full of T20 match winners, as do Australia, as do India, as do South Africa. And it's going to be very, very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I am a big fan of... obviously, USA. I think USA are always going to be an underdog. They overperformed what was expected of them last World Cup. They do have a world-class lineup. The players that play for USA are playing all around the world in the big leagues. They did very well against Pakistan. Pakistan probably did less than they expected, and USA did a little bit better, which got them into the Super 8s last year. And USA was a little bit unlucky against India. I don't know if you remember that game, but that game against India was close. It came down to that situation where they had that 5 penalty runs in the last 5 overs or so, which really swung the game in India's favor. But Netravolka got Kohli for a golden duck, got him for a duck, and that was, you know, a big movement in the game, and there was a drop catch late in the game. So I'm going to go all the way with Team USA. I'm all in on them to make the Super 8s. I'm all in. I'm always going to die on the hill that USA has a chance. I also have a sneaky one here. Nepal. Nepal is the most underrated cricketing nation by far right now. Nepalese people love their cricket. Nepalese people go hard for their cricket. The NPL is on right now. Now, they're absolutely blowing up over there. They get so many people to that ground. I don't know if you've seen the switches in their stadiums, but last year was their first season. Looked very, like, run down, where they just put up scaffolding. This time they've invested. They've got a big stadium over there. They got a lot of people interested in cricket. I think that they have a chance this season in the T20 World Cup. That's my little sneaky prediction is Nepal. But looking into the pools, I think England may have... a harder run there. Oh, well, there's a couple of different runs. I said India, obviously, India's going to be the favorite, no doubt. Australia probably comes in at a second slot is possible going all the way. They ended up losing last year to Afghanistan. Afghanistan also, they have an underrated side. They're like, even though they don't play Test cricket, they can play some T20 cricket. Right, Afghanistan. Thoughts on Afghanistan?
Yeah, they honestly are stacked, aren't they? They love cricket on those slower, lower wickets. That's part of the reason why they were so successful over in the US and the West Indies. They played a lot of cricket on pitches that turned. And when you look at their lineup, when you look at Rashid Khan, they look at Mujibur Rahman, and the other kind of quality spinners that they have available, as Ala Ghazanfar as well. They have players that are going to go and be successful. Plus, then they've got fearless batters at the top of the order with Zadran and Gurbaz. They look stacked. They're going to be very good over in India, in Sri Lanka. Those conditions are going to suit them.
Yes.
I agree with you with Nepal. I think they're very exciting. And the USA as well. You say Nepal are the most underrated cricket team in the world right now. And I don't know. I think the USA could be close to kind of nicking that title. When you think about batters with like Aaron Jones and Andre Hoos that have gone off and done really well in the Caribbean Premier League, and Netravalka that you've just spoken about, Ali Khan too with his experience in the IPL and the CPR with the Knight Riders family. And then I was just looking up this morning actually about Milind Kumar as well. He's had a ridiculous year this year in white ball cricket. I hope it's not England that come unstuck against one of these teams, but they are going to cause some upsets against somebody.
Absolutely. If looking at the groupings, Group A is India, Pakistan, USA, Netherlands, Namibia. So like obviously the top three there is India, Pakistan, and USA. They're going to be fighting for that top those top three spots. I think that USA can knock over Pakistan again. I think USA is going to be in with the Group A moving through to the Super Eights. The Group C standings where England sits: England, West Indies, Bangladesh, Nepal, Italy. I can see Nepal has already beaten the West Indies. They've already beaten the West Indies in a T20. I see Nepal and England coming out of Group C. There is a reality where Nepal could beat England. I think they could beat anyone on their day. I think they're definitely going to beat the other three. Italy's in there. And another weird piece of news, like they've dropped Joe Burns from the squad. I don't understand that logic at all. He got them there. He's invested. He started this whole Italy cricket revolution, and then they've taken him out of the side. Not sure if you've heard that. I don't know what's going on there.
It seems odd timing, doesn't it?
It does. It seems very bizarre.
To get over the line and get to this major tournament, unless there's something that's kind of fallen out behind the scenes for whatever reason, but I can't see any logical reason as to why you would do that. Surely you'd reward the guy that's kind of led the team forward to get to this stage, and just say go and have a great time at the T20 World Cup with the players that are there. Who's he been replaced by? Do you know?
Oh, I'm not sure who he's been replaced by. Just the headlines were like he's not going to play.
Yeah.
So it seems like it is one of those situations where possibly it's a behind the scenes issue. And I'm not exactly sure there, but it's going to be unfortunate. So they did make it there. They knocked Scotland out, I believe. That's who they knocked out of the World Cup, who were there last year. So and that was Scotland was in that pool with England last year. Group B, we have the Australia, Sri Lanka, Ireland, Zimbabwe, and Oman. That's the easiest of the pools. Australia, Sri Lanka should easily cruise over there in the Group B. Into Group D is definitely the hardest pool. We have New Zealand, South Africa, Afghanistan, Canada, and the UAE. So Afghanistan, South Africa, New Zealand have a tough road for who's going to be the top two in that pool. It could really go any way for them, either of those three sides.
Yeah, you can't see anybody slipping up against Canada with respect to the Canadian cricket team. The UAE could be an awkward team on their day, but certainly between Afghanistan, New Zealand, South Africa, one of those three are going to be incredibly upset, aren't they, when they come to the end of that group stage? Because you'd say, I mean, New Zealand have got the likes of Ratchim Ravindra, Jacob Duffy as well. Tim Seifert is in incredible form. You look at South Africa, the finalists the last time out, with the quality that they have available to them, the current World Test champions as well, and then Afghanistan, who we've just given flowers to. It's really, really difficult to go through and pick two from those three that are going to make it through at the top of the group. I don't think I'd be prepared to actually drop one of them out. I don't think I could at this stage.
Yeah, I can't tell you how those matches are going to go there. That's like, you wouldn't bet on any of those games. You'd bet on those games to come down to the wire. That's what you'd bet on. They're going to be some of the best games, and that's going to be the tightest pool to get out of. And yeah, I think I'm glad I'm not in pool D. That's what I'm excited on in pool D.
Correct.
I'd much rather take Pakistan over New Zealand, South Africa, or Afghanistan if I was the USA. That's how I'm looking at it for sure. So that's what's coming up. It's going to be in India and Sri Lanka coming up in February. It'll be February 7th. That'll be. So we're going to come out of the ashes. We're going to take a breath for a few weeks, and then we're going to roll right in to that ICC T20 World Cup. Dan Jets.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, easy for you to say. Before we go, tell us, you got the new channel. You started Zero Not Out. You've released the new club cricket. Just give us a little plug on the new channel you got going.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, it's gone really well. Dan Jads Cricket Club on YouTube. Dan Jads for Instagram and TikTok as well. I'm just doing my thing to showcase the sport that I love, right? I love talking about it. I love reading about it. I love researching about the sport and sharing my thoughts and feelings and things like that. So if that's what you're interested in, it'll be predominantly in an English kind of space, but obviously there'll be a look into the T20 World Cup and the Ashes and things like that, depending on where England are in the world. It would be great to have you over there. And hey, if I'm invited back out for a third season of Ball in Play, there could be some Ball in Play content coming as well. So
I was just going to say, the JM team, stay tuned for Dan Jed's, he's a Ball in Play a veteran. And hopefully we see him back out there in the warehouse, and we get to meet real in person. It's been a year. It's been 2 years or so now. We've never actually meet in the flesh, but hopefully that happens very, very soon. Dan Jazz, thank you for being on That's Cricket. I want you to give me a send off. I want you to give me a, and that's cricket.
Adam, that's cricket.